everyone. Welcome back to the Rockcast. This morning, I have a couple of fellas on with me. I have Josh Boyd and Robbie Denning. They did a review on the Stone Glacier Skyscraper two-person tent, and we're just going to talk about it. So thanks for hopping on, guys, and take it away.
All right. Let's see. Thanks. I ran my tent, Josh, last year. I got mine in, I believe, June of 2018. And I ran mine clear into February of 2019. How about you?
Yeah, I got my same time. It was June-ish, and I used it up into November, late November, end of our rifle season in Montana.
All right. So basically the specs on it, you know, just to give the listeners an idea of what this whole thing's all about. You know, if you don't know who Stone Glacier is, I don't know where you've been for 7 years, but they're a leader in backpacks, ultralight gear, stuff like that. But they got into the tent world last year. And the way I understand it, this tent was based on a similar design that was out there by another company. Do you remember that, Josh?
I do. It's a company that some of the folks at Stone Glacier have ties with, and they kind of had designed a tent specifically for them. They used, I think the company's called Slingfin, but they took one of their tent designs and kind of modified it slightly for Stone Glacier's use. And they ended up with a four-season lightweight tent. I mean, considerably lighter than most other four-season tents that are out there.
Yeah, 4.5 pounds is what the specs came in at. And I think that's exactly what mine came out within a few ounces when I weighed it. But for those of you that haven't seen it, Josh put his review up late last fall. We had a true to rock slide. We always have a comment thread going even before we do the review, where we're posting. It's kind of like a little blog on that product itself. And that thread can last a couple of months, you know. So if we get the gear, a lot of times we'll use it a little bit, just get some initial thoughts, throw it on that thread. And then as we're in the field, we're updating that thread. And that's what Josh and I did together last year. That was kind of throughout the summer. And I remember a couple times being at, 10,000 feet and getting cell service and, snapping a couple of pictures and giving a little update from the top of the mountain. But my first use on mine, and this is how it always is for me, is I get gear. I'm so flipping busy. I don't have time to open it. I don't have time to read it. I literally unboxed it here at the house, took a look at it, threw it in the pannier, and headed to the hills. I'd never set it up in the yard. I know that's not a good practice, and I would never recommend that, but I just didn't have time. So my first setup for mine was packing into the backcountry late July, about 9 o'clock, riding the horses, and I still had about an hour to go, and a big thunderstorm was coming in from the southwest like they always do, and I just thought, I'm not going to make it. I don't want to be up on these big ridges when that comes in. So I just stopped, tied the horses, kicked out a flat spot and set it up, and I wish I would have set it up at home. And Josh, I'll let you explain why on the little web truss.
The initial setup can be a little bit intimidating. I don't want to say intimidating, just confusing at first, especially if you've never done it before, have never been around this kind of tent. It doesn't have your typical stick your poles in the corners and then clip your tent body to the poles kind of setup. You have to get this web truss lined up in the right orientation and then slip your poles into the web truss. And then put this other cross pole in, and it kind of goes in a non-intuitive way, and then kind of tension everything down, and then throw your fly over the top of that. So there's an extra step or two in there that can be a little confusing. I recommend setting it up in your yard when you first get it, and then you can leave that web truss set up and attached to the tent from there on out. You don't need to take it off after that. But the initial setup is to do it under daylight and easy conditions.
I think you listed 15 minutes in your review as your first setup. I was probably more like 25, you know, with a headlamp and thunderstorm coming in. But you're right. The web truss, once you've put it on, you don't have to take it off again. And so for those of you that might have a hard time envisioning what a web truss is, it's shaped like a cross. It goes lengthwise over the tent, and then it goes across the tent. And just think of a truss on a house. That's what it's designed to do, is add strength to the tent. So the way Josh described it, with those poles going through there and the way that it clips to the tent and then picks the tent up, it's designed for snow load and wind load. And I did get mine into fairly heavy snow in February, but for the most part in my fall testing, my summer testing, it was just wind that I tested in. And that, it's rock solid. That web truss does work. It adds a lot of strength to that tent tent. So it's a good design, but like we both experienced, set it up before you go into the hills and make sure you understand it. And then don't take your web truss off. Just leave it on after that.
Yeah, I think, after I had mine initially set up, I could get mine pitched in just a couple of minutes. It just felt like pitching a regular tent after that. So the learning curve is quick. So once you have the initial idea and everything's set up, it flies along. You can do it in the dark. You can do it by feel if you need. So once that web truss is installed, it's pretty simple.
I didn't think after I put it on, it was really any more difficult than any other tent I had set up, as far as time wise or anything like that. So people need to keep that in mind. Let's give some more specs on the tent. It's considered a 2-person tent, 4.5 pounds. It's got 2-pole system, right, Josh?
Yeah, it's two and a half.
Two and a half. Yeah. Two and a half. It's got one that goes across the web truss. Yep. And then just right from your written review, it's seven feet long. It covers 32 square feet. And then we both ran the vestibule. Just explain that vestibule, Josh, kind of how that square footage adds into that and, the entryways and all that. You really went into that into your review.
So, the tent body, the footprint of the tent itself is 32 square feet. It has two vestibules under the fly, and they each add 11 feet, so a total of 22 square feet of vestibule space. And they're on opposing sides of the tent that have a door, a separate door as well. So there's two doors to this thing, so you can access those vestibules from either side. So if there's two people in there, they each have their own door, and they each have their own vestibule. Or if you're using it solo, you can cook in one vestibule and keep your gear stored in the other vestibule and spread everything else out inside the tent. It's a palace when you're by yourself, but when there's two people, it's a little tighter and you got to be a little more organized. Having those two vestibules on opposing sides of the tent help keep things a little more organized for sure.
I really like the choice of having two vestibules and consequently two entryways into the tent. So for those of you that are trying to envision this, imagine a 7-foot long tent. On your right hand side, if you're laying in it, you're going to have a door and a vestibule. And on your left hand side, you're going to have a mirror image of that. And so you can go in and out either side of the tent. And that would work. I never took another guy with me, but that would work well for two guys, because then you've got two entryways. You're not climbing over each other. Nothing worse than 10-day backcountry breath and rolling over your buddy and breathing in his face from an inch away as you're trying to get out. You can avoid that with the dual entryways. But it was also nice. Sometimes I set mine up in a little patch of pines or something, and you end up piling gear on one side as you're laying in there, and I can't really get out that way. At least you had a choice to get out. And then I use mine a lot in two season conditions, because I started using it in July. It was really nice to open those doors, roll the vestibules back, and then the tent has screen doors as well, zip-in screen doors, and just drop the outside door and let the breeze come through. Because it gets, even when it's 60 or 70 degrees in the high country, it gets pretty warm. And, you're in a little greenhouse when you're in a tent. So mm-hmm. I really, really like that. And did you do any cooking in your vestibule, Josh?
I did a little bit, yeah. Not a lot. And when you say cooking, it's basically boiling water.
Yeah.
So to heat
you
up.
You weren't making pancakes, dude?
No, no pancakes and bacon, but it sounds good. So yeah, I did a little. It wasn't a lot. Most of the weather I was in, I could get outside and cook. But when it was raining, I did cook in there a little bit. And there's room for it. It would be a little harder if your vestibule was jammed full of gear. But I think there's still plenty of room in there. I mean, 11 square feet is fairly sizable. You can keep quite a bit of gear piled in there and still have room to cook. And like you said, with those dual doors and those mesh screens, you can get a really nice cross breeze blowing in there. I had mine unzipped all the time, especially when that sun was beating down on the tent and you're trying to take a nap in the afternoon or something. It was nice to have that breeze blowing through there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's pretty buggy in the summer. I mean, I've run a lot of floorless tents, but I don't like to run them until it gets cold enough for, you know, a little bit of frost in the high country and at least knock back, you know, the bugs 60-70%. But you know how it is in the summer. If you're out scouting or you got really early season archery stuff and it's hot, you're gonna have a lot of bugs and you just need to be able to get in and get out of them. They just drive me crazy slapping mosquitoes for no way to get out of them. And so that was really nice. I actually, Josh, cooked in my tent a lot. I probably had that tent, and I need to go back and look at the thread, but I think I did a solid 10 to 15 nights in that tent in the backcountry, not including the stuff I did here in the winter for my winter camping. We tested the Stone Glacier Chilkoot sleeping bag. That's a future review Jordan's going to do. But I tested that in February. You know, I had that tent set up like 2.5 weeks out there in major fourth season conditions. You know, wind, heavy snow. It did great, but backing up into the summer and the fall, I cooked in it a lot and just using an MSR Whisper Light, you know, a 15-year-old stove. They've got a fairly big footprint. You know, they've got the white gas bottle and separate, you know, so it's not like a tower, like some of your jet boils. So, you know, it takes a little bit more room. And what I would do in the mornings is, you know, I'd get up, zip that door open, you know, tie the door back, and get the stove going. If anybody's ever used those Whisper Lights, you've got to prime them. So you've got to burn that little flame up a little bit. That's always a little scary, you know, in an enclosed tent. But that vestibule is big enough I could do that as long as I kept an eye on it. Get it primed and then get my pan on there and get the water boiling. I mean, you have to be careful. I mean, there's not a bunch of room. Josh is definitely right. But I really had no problem cooking in there at all. And, like what Josh says, when I'm talking about cooking, yeah, boiling water, but you know, you're cooking, you know, at least two meals a day in there. I just had no problem with it at all. Now, if I'd had a buddy, then yeah, we'd have been sitting back to back trying to do it. You know, it probably would have been easier just to get out of the tent, but with just one person, it was really no problem. And like it always is with tents, you know, it's at least with me, the first night I set them up, they're usually not quite right. You know, you don't have level ground and everything. And after a day or two of using it, I was kind of figured out how to add the most square footage in that vestibule, you know, really getting it tight, you know, turning the tent just right and everything. So I had good experiences cooking in there. And I, you know, if you really got tent bound for a few days, you know, you're still going to be okay. If you have to cook in, it would be my recommendation.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. The tent fly itself, I thought was it's marketed and sold as a four season tent. And there's a lot of questions about whether or not it's a true four season. If the fly doesn't go all the way to the ground, well, it seems the fly on this tent is a little off the ground, which aids in ventilation. But you know, the tent body has doors the windows and doors that fully zip closed with fabric. So it can be fully enclosed to keep moisture outside of the inner tent body. It would be nice probably to have in really inclement weather to have that fly go all the way to the ground, but I didn't find it necessary. And it did breathe a little better than some other tents that have a fly that go all the way to the ground. I did notice that. What are your thoughts?
I that was why I asked you before we went on the review that I thought fourth season tents how to fly that goes all the way to the ground. But talking to you, that's not necessarily a determining factor for a fourth season tent. It has to do with the way that the doors zip and that they, you know, they zip up. And so at first I was thinking, okay, are they trying to pawn this off as a fourth season tent? And it's not. But after I used it and got it in high winds, and then definitely that February test, you know, I probably put 6 to 8 inches of heavy snow on that tent over a couple of weeks. The vestibule does just fine. And so there's a trade-off with what Josh says. I have slept in tents with vestibules that go all the way to the ground. Well, the trade-off is they are muggy. They are really muggy. You're constantly mm-hmm. unzipping stuff and everything. And so having that little airspace in there is a good trade-off. But when I got all that snow on it, it actually did seal the tent off. You know, the snow slid off of it. So then it would cover that space. And so then I got to kind of experience that whole thing of, ooh, you got to have a door unzipped, you know, when you've got it sealed to the ground. And the great thing about those RockSlide pre-review threads, if you're interested in any gear, jump on rockslide.com, go to the forums and watch for those threads. We've got members posting on those too. We want everybody's opinion on it. It's not just about, you know, the RockSlide riders reviewing this stuff. We got members out there that are using the stuff as hard, if not harder, than some of us. And there was a guy on there, Josh. I don't know if you saw him, and he had it out in those conditions. Yeah, and he said the same thing.
Remember that? Yeah.
Yeah, he said the same thing, that he had some condensation issues, but at the same time, it was just bulletproof. And, you know, he had some heavy snow on that tent. And it,
yeah.
So there's always trade-offs on that stuff. And, you know, sometimes when I hear people knocking on a product, I can just tell that, well, you know, it's going to be pretty hard to cover every single scenario with a product, you know.
Right.
You have a four season tent that doesn't breathe, okay, you're going to be sealed a little bit more, but you know, you're not always in four season conditions either, you know. Sometimes it's nice to be able to open that up. So anyways, that's my take on the vestibule. Looking at these specs here, I don't think we gave them. The tent itself is 15D, the tent body, and then the fly is 20D. And I think where you were going, Josh, was the tent can be used without the fly.
Yeah,
as a second season. Did you do any of that?
I did. I used it quite a bit in the summer without the fly. A few times in some light rain, but other times in clear skies, but really windy conditions. I just wanted to see kind of how the tent body would hold and hold its structure, and whether or not it would stay dry in there if it did get a little bit of rain on it. So I did a little testing in that regard, and I mean, it held up really well. It shed the wind fairly well when without the staking of the fly across the top of the body. So just the tent body itself, it held up with some wind. You know, the wind pushed a little bit more than normal, but I didn't find anything that was concerning. And then with the light rain, it didn't penetrate the tent body. It just rolled off. So if you were in a big soaker, you'd probably get wet in there, but it would take a while. So I did run it that way, without the fly, and I haven't done it either, but apparently there's some accessories that you can run it without the tent body. You can just get like a bathtub floor for this setup and pitch the fly over the top of that if you wanted to dump the body for different conditions.
I did not know that. So you could use that fly basically as a tarp.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you have to have the bathtub floor to do that? Could you just simply run it?
If you were very, very creative, you probably wouldn't need it. But boy, that floor would make it life way easier. Just basically to tension those poles, those cross poles, to something opposing, you know, so they would be pulling against each other on that floor.
Oh, I see. Gotcha. Yeah, because there would be no way to set it up without the tent body, because you wouldn't have the web truss. So if I'm understanding you, you're tensioning those poles from the ground up against the fly, and then you would put the end of the poles into the bathtub floor.
Into the bathtub floor, yep.
Gotcha. Okay, I did not know that. So, if anybody has done that, jump on that RockSlide thread. It's in our Sleep Systems forum, and show us how it's done. I mean, that because I'm sure there's some guys out there that could be a real option for.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think they make a mesh tent body as well. So I think they have or maybe it's not it's a mesh tent body with the bathtub floor, but they also have a footprint, like a ground sheet that you can use. So you can use that mesh body, bathtub floor, or the ground sheet to run it without the main tent body.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, if anybody's interested in that, jump on stoneglacier.com, jump over there, take a look at that. They've got some videos up. If you jump over to the Rock Slide YouTube, I believe I did a video on it too. I do so many reviews. I don't know about you, Josh. Sometimes I have to kind of think like, man, did I video that thing or did I take
pictures? Or, you know?
Yeah. That's the great thing about Rock Slide. We're multimedia. We got stuff going on our YouTube channel, on our forums. So if anybody's interested, I look into that. And as it is with a lot of this gear, even when we go spend 20, 30 days on it, there's still always a little bit more to learn. And that's why we always invite members into these pre-review threads and, you know, get their opinions on it. Cause Josh and I spend a lot of time in the backcountry, but we still don't get to test everything in every single condition and every single configuration, like what he was talking about with that fly. I had no idea you could do that. If anybody's out there that's testing that, we'd love to hear about it. And I was going to add to that, Josh, as you were talking, I actually slept in mine in the two season mode a lot too, probably a third of those nights, you know, just big starry nights and everything. And
yeah,
I liked it for a couple of reasons. Just saved me some time on not having to throw the fly on there, a little bit more ventilation. And, you know, sometimes in the high country in the summer, you know, if it's only getting down to 50 at night, it can be a little warm. That the fly just adds dead airspace, which is good when it's cold, but mm-hmm. when it's warm, you don't need it. So that's what I liked about the tent. And I guess I want the listeners to know, I'm not an ultralight backpacker like Josh. Josh, you're probably at least counting down to the ounce. I don't know if you go clear to the ground. Yeah.
No, I'm counting ounces for sure.
Gotcha. And I'm counting more. I care about weight. I totally care about weight. I want to be able to throw something on my back if I need to, but I don't do a lot of just, you know, only backpack only hunts. Usually if I'm using a backpack, I'm using horses. I'm getting as far in as I can. And then I'm spiking out from there, returning to the horses, each day. So I might not be counting ounces, but bulk is really important to me, because I only really want to run one pack horse. And sometimes I just lead a pack horse and I walk, but years ago, I do these big pack strings, you know, we had wall tents and bacon and eggs and we did all that stuff. And, you know, it looked like the clampets going into the mountains, and I don't do that stuff anymore. So I'm more concerned about, you know, bulk as much as I am weight. And so where I'm going with this is that tent packs down nicely for a fourth season, 4.5 pound tent with a fly that could get you into fourth season conditions. You know, it's a pretty trim package. Would you agree with that, Josh? You've probably used other fourth season tents.
Yes, I would say I would definitely agree with that. It's the lightest fourth season tent that I've used. But with that being said, you know, if you're an early season hunter strictly, it might be a bit overkill for you. But if you're the kind of hunter that has a bunch of seasons and most of the time you roll into snowy, windy, wet conditions, then, you know, this would be a great all-around tent for those guys and gals that want something like that. I think for most of the hunting I do in September, it's a bit overkill. But then again, boy, when the snow hits in September, like we've had for, you know, the last few seasons, it can be a lifesaver. You'll be glad you packed that thing. From a shelter standpoint, it's a bit bulkier than a lot of the stuff I've been running lately, which has been like floorless, ultralight kind of tarp style setups. But that's a whole different subject, you know. They're not for everybody, and they're only for very specific, you know, types of the year and types of weather. But yeah, having that thing in my pack was kind of nice to pull that out when you knew the weather was going to be bad for a while.
Yeah, and for the ounce counters that are out there, if you wanted to run a full four-season tent, but you also know that, hey, I'm going to be in conditions where I'm not going to need that. You know, if you're really watching the weather forecast, you're not going to be into heavy thunderstorms or snow or anything like that. You could just run the inner tent, like what we did, and leave the fly. Need to watch your weather forecast on that. And that's going to cut your bulk by probably a third. I did not break out the weight on the fly. I don't remember seeing that in your review.
I don't remember it either.
Yeah, but you know, it's probably 20% of the weight, you know, because you're still going to need your poles, you're still going to need your web truss, you know, that kind of stuff. But it definitely gives you that two season option. So you have two users right here that both used it in basically a second season mode, and we had good luck with it. We really did, and it'll shed a light rainstorm. It'll definitely handle the wind because you've still got the web truss. I mean, the web truss is intact when you're in that earlier season mode with it, and so you might think about that rather than having to own a tarp and a, you know, a three or a four season tent. You could do it all, but you know, if you're the guy that's, you know, counting down to the gram and stuff like that, you know, running small packs, you know, things like that, or long hunts, then maybe you do want to go with the tarp. But you know, there's, like we said earlier, there's going to be some trade-offs with the tarp too.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, speaking of that, I have in possession right now Stone Glacier's new Sky Air Ultra tarp. So look for a review on that in the upcoming months. And I'll have a thread going here shortly on Rockslide, kind of a pre-review thread. So people can jump on and provide input, ask questions, post up their experiences with it. But it's another Sling Fin collaboration with Stone Glacier on an ultralight tarp. So another.
What can you tell us about it so far? I mean, got specs or anything on it?
It's super lightweight. I have a inner like bug mesh bathtub floor, and then the tarp itself, and then a vestibule, and those are all a la carte pieces. You can leave them off or put them on, whatever your needs are. But with the mesh inner, the outer, and the vestibule, it's like 1.5 pounds, like 20 ounces roughly. Yeah. Wow. That's counting stakes, cordage, and the tent body, not counting the trekking poles, which you use to pitch it. And it packs down to the size of an extra large grapefruit. So it's super small. It's really nice. I have not spent any time in it. I pitched it in my yard, but I'm going to take it to British Columbia here in next week for my wife and I are going up for 2 weeks on a canoe trip. So that thing's going along with us. Give it a little test up there and see what I think of it.
All right. But we'll be watching for that thread.
Yeah. And I'll be using it into September into some of the shoulder season of winter. So we'll see how it performs. I have high hopes though. It's nicely made, nicely designed.
I'll be watching that thread. And for those of you that are maybe a little bit new to Rockslide, the cool thing about those pre-review threads, when you get on there, as long as you're a member, it's free to join, look for the watch button in the upper right hand of the thread. And what that does, if you click on that, you have an option of either getting an email when Josh posts on that thread, or if you're pretty active on Rockslide, it'll send you a personal message and you'll see it right when you log into Rockslide. And so it allows you to not have to babysit the thread, because sometimes we don't post on them for a couple of weeks. You know, we're out there using the gear. Maybe we're on a trip where that piece of gear is not suited for that trip. So those threads will go quiet for a while. But if you hit that watch button, you'll get a notification when we post. And I know that I think last time I looked, I have 270 threads that I'm watching right now. Part of it is because I'm the editor. I mean, I got to keep track of this stuff. But, you know, if I see a member on there talking about something that either I own or I want to own, I always hit that watch button. And then I don't miss the conversation, because there's nothing worse than getting on there a month or two later and like, whoa, I missed all this stuff. They've had this out in the field. I didn't even see it. So I'll be looking for that on that. It's Sky Air, right?
Yes.
Awesome. Well, let's see. I think that about covers it. I jumped on the Stone Glacier, the website, and they've got the skyscraper at $595. So remember that could serve as two tents, the way we explained it. So you kind of want to confirm that before how you're going to use it, that might be a little more cost effective if you're using it as a summer tent as well. rather than having to own two tents is what I'm getting at. But their specs, two people, they listed as three poles. Josh and I called it 2.5 poles. We talked about the doors, two doors, 12 stakes, 12 guy lines. They list the length at 92 inches. They must have the vestibule in there for that because I thought it was 7 feet. That's probably just the tent.
I think it's the tent body. Yeah.
Gotcha. Interior height. Oh, by the way, we didn't talk about interior height. 41 inches. Okay. So I could sit in Indian style in that thing and cook. You know, I could, you know, you're not going to stand up and put your pants on, you know, but it's not, you know, you're not breathing against the ceiling either when you're laying in bed. I would say it was what I would expect for a tent that size.
Yeah. And I would say the walls were steep. They're steeper than a lot of other tents, which is nice. It gives you more interior room. Yeah. They're more like a assault style mountaineering tent. The ones I'm familiar with, they're really steep wall. They shed snow really well, but they also just give you some volume and some shoulder room when you are sitting up. So I thought that was great. One other thing worth mentioning on the pole system is that half pole that goes to the cross member there. You can guide those down with a trekking pole. They have a little pocket on the ends, and you can stick a trekking pole in there to stabilize that half pole under really severe wind loads or snow loads. So I never did that, but I've seen them set up that way, and that adds quite a bit of stability. Yeah, I threw them in here in the yard when I initially set them up just to see what they – how they performed, and it really stiffened up the structure of the tent. But I never ran it in the field that way.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I forgot about that. And what he's talking about is that web truss, that cross pole. You're basically adding stability by securing each end of that cross pole to the ground. And if you're not a trekking pole runner, you can cut sticks to do it. It's got a little Velcro, maybe a 1.5 inch wide Velcro web on the web truss that you could wrap around your pole. But I was looking at it and I thought, oh, I could get a stick in there if I needed to too.
Oh, for sure.
Gotcha. So anyways, that's the skyscraper. There are some accessories. I looked as Josh was talking about that. They do have a mesh insert for that tent. So, you know, you could go, in bug country, if you want to sleep out under the stars. They do have a footprint. Neither of us ran the footprint, right, Josh?
Right. Okay. Yeah. And I would recommend the footprint for people that are pitching it in rocky, you know, sharp rock country, like sheep, if you're sheep hunting, or if the geology where you hunt is just lots of bare rocky ground. Cause I did poke a couple holes in the floor of my tent. It is on the lighter side, you know, like you said before, there's trade-offs to everything. And one of those is weight and weight versus durability. And there's kind of that happy compromise. And, you know, it doesn't seem like the tent floor is extremely durable like some other tents, but with the footprint down, it would at least double your the weight of that fabric and provide a really solid protection. Or, you know, make sure you clean off your tent pad really well before you pitch.
And I had the same experience. I didn't want to blame it on Stone Glacier because, you know, I'm an old man, dude. So I run a little easy cot in there. And so I that's a great thing with horses is I can get up off the ground. And I poked a couple holes in mine too, but it was right where the cot legs came into the tent. And so it's a 6-point support point on the cot. So I weigh 180 pounds. What's that? 30 pounds per leg into the tent. And I did poke a couple of holes in there, but you know, they weren't even very big either. It wasn't like it ripped the tent or anything like that. I fixed them with, I can't remember the product, but, you know, I just kind of glued them back shut and everything. But just what Josh said, you know, keep that in mind. Clean the ground off really, really well. Most of you are not going to be sleeping in a cot in a tent like this. And if you decided to go with their footprint, it's just adds another 7 ounces. And that's going to solve your problem right there. And you could even use a piece of Tyvek or, you know, just a little tarp or something like that. If you wanted, I just would imagine that their footprint's going to be, a lot lighter than what you could get. But, they offer the footprint that we're talking about, but then they offer the bathtub footprint as well. Both of them are $89. Yeah, so there's two footprints. You can get the tub, which talking to you, Josh, it sounds like the tub. Basically, you could use just the fly and the tub if you wanted to do that. Or I imagine the main design of that tub is to keep water out if you're really in wet conditions, right?
I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, I think that's everything on this. So, you know, for you people that are out there that are in the four season mode with the need for maybe some options to go a little bit lighter, take a look at this tent. Stone Glacier can sell direct to customer, but some of the Rockslide sponsors carry it as well. I've seen it at James River Archery.
One Shot has one.
Yeah, of course. I'm glad you said that. One Shot sells a lot of them. So get a hold of those guys, shop it out. But we could totally recommend it. If you do end up with the tent, make sure you jump on that thread. We'd love to see your pictures and your adventures and hear your experiences with it too. We're always learning.
Absolutely. I appreciate those threads when people chime with ideas on what they would like to see in the testing. So that helps a ton. Yeah. Check it out.
Me too, dude. When my final reviews are better when I have those threads, because I can take in the experiences of the members. And then some of the questions they ask, I'm like, you know, I never even thought about that, you know, so they're a lot better. So anyways, I think that's everything we got on this. So thanks for coming on, Josh. And Jordan, does that get you everything you needed?
No, guys, that's perfect. I had some stuff written down and to make sure we covered, and you guys hit it all.
All right.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. Thanks for hopping on, guys.
Yeah. Thanks you for bet. Having us.
Talk soon.
All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to episode 4 of the Rockcast. We have some cool new episodes coming up. The next episode we're going to drop is Hunting in Grizzly Country with my buddy Casey Johnson. With that, we're just going to go through, you know, what it's like hunting in Grizzly Country, and that you shouldn't really be as scared of it, but, you know, some precautions to take while you're back there. Robbie and I also hop back on and talk about the Maven S2 spotting scope versus the Nikon ED50, those nice little compact spotters. And we got some other stuff coming up as well, going through some inreaches and GPS watches with SNS Archery, DIY Alaska with Sean Smith. Stay tuned, hit that subscribe button, go over and check out the Rockslide forums, sign up, it's free, and start getting involved with conversations. On that forum, there's going to be a section called the Rockcast. In there, I will be posting a new thread for every episode so we can have a discussion after you listen to the episode if you have any questions. So thanks for hopping on. Hit that subscribe button, and we'll see you guys next time.